Struggling with your faith? You're not the only one. You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show.
Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show. We're streaming live at drewmarshall.ca, and we're live right here in Southern Ontario on Joy 1250. Andrew Marin is the author of Us Versus Us, The Untold Story of Religion and the LGBT Community. Here are the stories behind the largest ever scientific study conducted on the religious history, practices, and beliefs of the LGBT community. The data, depending where you're from, and underlying stories of in this book, Us Versus Us, have never been told before, and the vacuum left by that neglect has been filled with conjecture, presumption, prejudice, anger, insecurity, paranoia, and a host of other unfortunate distractions. And so we find ourselves in a place where LGBT people feel persecuted by the church, and people of conservative faith feel persecuted by the LGBT community. I mean, that's really where things are at. And still, that hasn't changed. I think it's gotten better, don't you?
I think the pendulum is swinging. I think, in our lifetime, it's gone from us persecuting them to now some people on the Christian side of the coin feel like they are being persecuted back.
Right. Okay, well, Andrew Marin is a world-renowned voice on the intersection of faith and sexuality. He is the author of Love is an Orientation. Love that, eh? Eh? Love is an Orientation and our last option. He is researching and teaching in the Divinity School at the University of St. Andrews and has spoken on issues of faith, sexuality, and reconciliation to the U.S. Congress, the United Nations, the Australian Parliament, and churches and conferences throughout the world. And right now, I think he's actually in St. Andrews, actually one of my favorite places in the world to go to.
Isn't that where you got free golf?
I did. I got free golf. I can't tell that story. Andrew, welcome to the show. Is St. Andrews not beautiful? Come on.
It's the best place on earth, right next to Chicago, I'll tell you that.
What? What? Oh, my goodness. That's a weird contrast.
You know, I've got a rep where I'm from, so that's fantastic. But, yeah, no, this. I mean, it's a tiny little town literally in the middle of nowhere, and the whole place is just 1,000-year-old ruins and golf. So, you know, it's really great.
Have you been on the Himalayas?
I have, yeah. I have done all of it. Nice thing is because I'm a local, I get this thing called a little Lynx ticket, so I pretty much get to go and play for free on any of the courses, which is really special.
Wow, that's fantastic. Well, when you next time you're at the Himalayas, which by the way is a giant mini putt, but it's like not with little houses and cars and trinkety thing, clowns and stuff. It's like legit 18-hole, 3-tier greens. Crazy, crazy putting. But next time you're there, talk to the lady that runs the place, her and her son. They've got an amazing story. And she a number of years ago, started looking upwards and has quite a faith story. So talk to her. Ask her, because I know this because I'm involved with Teen Ranch over in Scotland.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I will, I'll drop by there tomorrow when it's open and say, hey, and, you know, while I'm there, I'll pour one out for you as well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Right. Bye. I have so many friends that finish their phone calls like that. One guy named Grant Wallace, who's a funny guy, and at the end of his phone call, he'll always say at the end of it, all right, well, I'm going to take care of it. We'll talk to you later, Grant. Right. Bye. They go up in their voices when they say bye at the end. Right. Bye.
Anyway. Yeah, it's about bi is generally 3 octaves higher than whatever anyone's normal voice is, and I haven't quite figured out why, but it's always bi,
bi, bi,
kind of like three high-pitched bis in a row.
That's so funny. So funny. Anyway, I'm jealous. And how long are you going to be over there for? Are you coming back soon?
Well, we'll see what happens. Going to be here at least probably another year and potentially more. But who knows? Things are up in the air.
Is homosexuality a sin?
You asked me that last time. And I'll give you the same answer to that. You know, my vocation is one of a bridge builder, and a bridge builder needs to be able to remain neutral. And there's a difference between neutral and apathetic, but a bridge builder needs to remain neutral in order to facilitate and have credibility with both communities to bring them together.
So this is what I just heard you say. Beep, 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 beep. Did you just back away from that? I mean, is that what you're saying? Because you know that the evangelical community is going to crucify you, literally, unless you say homosexuality is a sin. You know what I mean? How can you?
No,
you...
I hear you. I've amazingly, though I'm not Jesus, I've been crucified on multiple occasions by both ends of the spectrum.
Huh.
But yet, here I am still living. The interesting thing, though, about our research in relation to the book is that we found that the topic of sin, though that seems to be everyone's kind of defining question, the topic of sin really is only impacting about 8% of the LGBT community in terms of their relationship with church or if they want to go to church. And what tends to happen is that a lot of talking head folks, not saying you in general, but a lot of talking head folks, point to sin as the thing that everybody has to agree or disagree on.
Yeah.
And what our research shows is that the LGBT community in general really doesn't care so much what people believe. They care more about what it means to actually be a part of a broader community and accepted regardless of if there's agreement or disagreement. And one of the things that our research continued to point to, you know, the example of politics with Republicans and Democrats and, you know, all these different things. It's like people can function rooting for, you know, the Maple Leafs or the Jets.
Whoa.
Well, or maybe not.
Whoa.
But they can.
Yeah.
But
be
they
careful.
Can. That's the thing.
Thin ice.
And it's very similar. It's very similar.
Okay. So most times when I have discussed this subject with people who have been very vocally against the LGBT community, and then all of a sudden they turn around, you know, they lighten up, they take it a little easier, they change their minds, whatever. Maybe I shouldn't say most times. A lot of times it's because they actually discover that someone they care about is gay.
Mm-hmm.
Am I just painting with a broad brush there, or is there some kind of truth with that?
No, there's definite truth to that. I mean, you know, any contentious topic is always, nuance always reveals itself in relationship.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
You know, it's very easy to be binary and black and white on a lot of different topics when it doesn't reach the depths of your own soul, and then the next thing you know, something like that does happen, and it changes everything for a lot of folks. So, you know, and how I tried to live that out and how I tried to practice it was, you know, I lived in Boys Town, which is the LGBT neighborhood of Chicago, mm-hmm. for a dozen years. And so my experiences and not just with this research, but in general with the Marin Foundation in my life, revolved around actually being an incarnational, intentional person in the neighborhood to say we need to bring people together. For me, this is not an ethereal topic, or it's not a construct to be figured out or discovered. It's actually something that is an embedded part of my life, which is why, again, you know, nuance and relationship does matter so much, not only to me but a lot of people in shaping their own worldviews.
Okay, apparently there's a big statistic floating around in this study that says a boatload of people in the LGBT community grew up in church. True story?
That is a true story. That is a true story. Give you a little context about that.
Don't wreck a good interview with context. Come on.
Yeah, sorry. Hey, don't let facts get in the way of a good opinion.
Yeah.
So, you know. No, but the little context is that the general American population, or North American population, goes to is raised in the church at about 75% rate. And when I say raised in the church, what I mean, and we define that as you attend some type of church or church function at least one time per week from about 0 to 18. So that could be Mass, it could be a Sunday service, it could be a Bible study, it could be a fellowship group, it could be any of these types of things. Mm-hmm. And our research was not just specifically for Christianity. It was regarding religion in general. So in our statistics, what we found is that 86% of the LGBT community, which is 11% higher than the average general population, 86% of the LGBT community was raised in a religion from ages 0 to 18, and that spans 9 different faiths and 54 different denominations within that. Now, in general, Catholic and Protestant Christianity created about 93% of that 86, so it's obviously the overwhelming percentage, but that is about the same as the breakdown within the general population as well. And so the question became, for us, looking at the research, where did this extra 11% of people come from? Because if you assume that everything is equal going into it, so let's say 75% of LGBT North Americans and 75% of the general population are all raised in church, where is that extra 11%? And one of the amazing and heartbreaking things that we found in our research is that 11% came from LGBT youth who were not raised in a faith. And what happened was, when they realized that they were gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgender, they prayed to the Lord 100%, what we found, 100% prayed to the Lord and said, God, make me straight.
Right.
And when God did not make them straight...
Then whose fault is it?
Well, yeah, I mean, who knows? I don't... You know, I also wouldn't call it fault, by the way.
No,
but
I can never get the right words down. No, but that's the
semantics.
But yeah. that's the dilemma. That's the personal dilemma that my friends who are gay, who have cried out to God and gone to the healing places and had people pray over them time and time again, decades, and they're still gay. That's right. The thing that goes through their mind is, then what am I doing wrong? What am I doing wrong?
Yeah. Or the other thought is, God loves me, and this is who I am, and what do I do with this?
Exactly.
So, yeah. But that becomes a very difficult, or for some people, it becomes an easy conclusion. But the point is, though, within contemporary culture, how it is today, the point of someone saying, either, oh no, I am more theologically conservative on this topic, and therefore I am going to try and live out a celibate sexual ethic, or someone who says, no, this is who God made me, and therefore I'm going to live out my true identity. Regardless of which direction people go, the problem with contemporary culture is that all of a sudden you choose one of those, choose is a relative term, but you choose one of those directions, and the next thing you know, you have 50% of the people who totally have your back, and now all of a sudden you are supposed to have 50% of the people who totally hate your guts, and you're the worst thing ever. And what this research is showing us is that us versus them binary is not actually true. This research is showing us that it is, and it has been, we just haven't known, but it is us versus us. This is about faith, this is about religion, this is about God, and all being under this umbrella, something that has been socially and politically overdone to the extent that now people have to choose what team and who and what corner to fight from.
If you believe that something your friend is, someone you care about, relative, whatever, something they're doing is a sin, right? Let's just say you believe that. That's your theology, whether it's murder or whatever. I'm not going to start listing sins. But if you think that, you know, they're doing something that is offensive to God and they're claiming to be a Jesus person, because let's separate these two categories. If you're not a Jesus person, then just lighten up. If you are a Jesus person, then there's a thing in there. There's a bunch of scriptures you got to really think through and look into. And what does it mean? What does it mean? What does it mean? So now some people have landed on that it's a sin. And some people said, yeah, I'm not seeing it that way. But if you've got a friend There's someone you care about, and they're doing any sin, and you're not cool with that. What's the recipe to continue loving them and not ostracizing them? Because I'm thinking about scripture now, and was there not a little scenario where basically it's okay, you go and talk to them, and if they don't stop, then you bring more people, and if they don't stop, then you treat them like tax collectors? And if I remember in the Bible, Jesus loved the tax collector.
Right, indeed.
So I'm confused.
Indeed. Yeah, well, here's my response, is that there is a difference, and now what I'm about to say is specifically talking to this person who believes it's a sin, and they say, oh, I just do not know how to keep loving my
right.
friend, brother, uncle, sister, whomever.
Yep.
So specifically to them, what I would say is that there is a social and theological difference between validation and affirmation. So let me explain this for a second.
Okay.
You can validate somebody's journey, story, experience, reality as legitimate to them, without having to feel like you have to then give up what you believe and join their side. And this goes back to this whole binary understanding of what it means to just have any belief in contemporary society. Is that a great example is gay marriage. So let's say, for instance, this conservative person has their whomever and uncle, sister, brother, they're getting married. And so the question that we get all the time, we being the Marin Foundation, is, do I go to my sister's wedding even though I don't believe, or yeah. even though I believe it's a sin?
Yeah.
And what I say to them all the time is, you can go to the wedding and you can validate their reality and the love that they feel to their partner without internally feeling like you have to either agree with it or you're betraying them. This is the whole point of what it means to love in disagreement. Love today, not just a, like a sexual love, but just love in general. Love is predicated upon agreement. And in no realm does love or should love ever be predicated upon agreement. So the question becomes, how do we love in disagreement? And my answer is, there is a difference between validation and affirmation. As you just said, Jesus illustrated that exact type of love so well. In fact, he illustrated it so well that the disciples at one point in the gospel said, Jesus, you have got to stop going to these places and these homes and hanging out with these people, because do you know what other people are saying about you?
Yeah.
They think that you're a part of the Roman oppressing ruling entity. And Jesus says to them, I don't care what you say, or I don't care what other people think about me. I'm going to do what I need to do. And so he went. And because he went, it didn't mean that all of a sudden he wasn't the Son of God. It just meant that he was demonstrating love and validating people's reality without necessarily having to agree as a defining characteristic of love.
Okay, on the phone with Andrew Marin. By the way, we're saying your name right. It's Marin, right?
It is Marin, yes.
Okay. I just thought, since you've been living in Scotland for so long, it might be pronounced differently now, you know.
No.
Marin.
Marin. Although, unfortunately, I haven't gotten a Scottish accent yet, which I'm kind of bummed about.
Right. Bye. Author of Us Versus Us, The Untold Story of Religion in the LGBT Community. Andrew is a world-renowned voice on the intersection of faith and sexuality and is the author of Love as an Orientation. Andrew, why? I'm not going to say this right, but just bear with me. Why are you into the gay stuff so much?
Well, it all started when I was 20. So I was raised in an Assemblies of God church, quite conservative, and I didn't know any LGBT people at all. And so for me, at that point, it was very kind of iffy, and that this was back in the early 2000s when there was no gay marriage, and none of this type of stuff. Well, at least in America there wasn't. I know your country's a little different, but I was very standoffish towards LGBT folks. And then the summer after my freshman year in college, my three best friends all came out to me in three consecutive months.
Wow.
And I'm an only child, and so therefore my best friends were literally my siblings.
Sure.
who I hung out with every day, and that's who I grew up with, and you know, I mean, they couldn't have been closer to me. And all of a sudden, it put a very clear wedge between me and them, and that was my doing. That was not their doing. And it wasn't until that, you know, that I realized, like, if I really want to figure out what the heck is going on with kind of our relationship and their life that I had no idea about, I think I should probably move into Boys Town with two of them. One of them went to a different university than I did. And so I ended up moving into Boys Town, and it just kind of went from there. When people started figuring out, so give you a little context about Boys Town, over 80% of the people who live in this neighborhood identify as LGBT. So there is a very clear sort of radar when there's a alpha male straight guy who's like living with a bunch of lesbians at this point. And so I sort of stuck out like a sore thumb. And then when people in the neighborhood started finding out that I was a Christian, people, they just started coming up to me. Random times we'd be out, and, you know, this is where I went grocery shopping and where I got my hair cut and where I hung out with my friends. And random people, hey, you're Straighty Straighterson. That's what everyone called me.
Straighty Straighterson. Oh, man.
No one even knew my name. And Straighty Straighterson, hey, I want to talk to you about some Bible stuff. And so that's really how the Marin Foundation was birthed. And it was the idea of a couple people in the neighborhood who said, man, you should start a nonprofit about this. And you could really, in more explicit terms, but they said, you could really help out your friendly conservative folks, yeah, and help bring us all together to stop this craziness that's going on.
You know, I get chastised a lot for people I bring on the show, whether they're pagans or whether they're Satanists or whether they're Mormons or Buddhists or Scientologists or whatever. It's just still such an uphill battle. People tune out. They say, oh, I can't listen to that Drew Marshall. Well, there's so many other reasons not to listen to me, let alone the fact that I bring on guests who have a different opinion of God and spirituality than you do.
Yeah.
So I kind of dig what you're doing, and I love the fact that you just went right into it. I mean, you went into Boys Town. You know, this pales in comparison, but I have been freaked out by certain communities, and I have done the same thing. I've gone into those communities, and guess what? I ain't so freaked out anymore. You know, it's just based on ignorance. The whole thing is anyway. I'm on a soapbox here.
Well, no, and that's the thing. Well, first off, you know, because you had Alice Cooper on as a guest, I was like, oof, I don't know if I can go on that Drew Marshall show.
Yeah, I know.
Number one, but you know, I got over it.
How about Stephen Harper? You don't even know who Stephen Harper is, do you?
Stephen Harper.
Oh, my goodness.
No.
Sorry.
You Americans. We know who George W. Bush is. We know who Barack Obama is. We know who
Bernie Trump
is. Is that your new prime minister?
No, our new prime minister is Justin Trudeau. I'm talking about
the hot
old
one.
No.
Yeah, he's the guy that looks like the prince from Little Mermaid.
One of my best friends here in St. Andrews is Canadian. He's listening right now, and he's definitely going to slap me across the face.
Good for not knowing who Stephen Harper is.
Way to go, Straighty Straighterson.
Yeah, Straighty Straighterson. Okay, here are the stories behind the largest ever scientific study conducted on the religious history, practices, and beliefs of the LGBT community. The book is called Us Versus Us, The Untold Story of Religion and the LGBT Community. Can I hear a story, please, Straighty Straighterson? Can you tell me a story?
Yeah, sure. So here's a very interesting one that has to do with statistically, 86%, give you kind of the 30,000-foot view, 86% were raised in a faith community, 54% left that faith community, which is almost 20% higher than the general population.
Oof.
36% continue practicing in their faith community, regardless of if it's more progressive or more conservative. So out of the 54% who left, 76% are open to making a return. Now, one of these couples, there's a lesbian couple who made this return to a church. And what happened was the church opened up a daycare. And this is a theologically conservative evangelical church. And they open up a free daycare in a major city in the U.S. where daycare, private daycare, costs $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year. And so this church said, "Oh, we're going to open up this daycare, and it's going to be free, and it's going to be wonderful. And our only requirement is for whoever drops their kids off at this daycare, they mandatorily then have to volunteer." I don't know, it was like once or twice a week for it.
Sure.
So this lesbian couple lives close to this church, got word about the daycare, and they had never gone to the church or, you know, anything like that. But they were like, "Oh my goodness, this is going to save us tens of thousands of dollars. This is a great idea." So they drop their kid off at the daycare, and they say, "Where do we sign up?" And this evangelical church was freaking out, because they were like, "Well, what do you mean, where do you sign up? I mean, you're a lesbian couple, and we don't understand." So anyways, I get a call from the pastor, and he's like, "Well, you know, what should we do?" And I said, "Well, you call this, you call this daycare part of your community center. And in your community is not just straight people. So if you want to call this, community center, your church's center, that's one thing. But if it's a community center, it's open everywhere." Anyways, needless to say, what happened is that this pastor was like, "You're right. I don't have to agree in order to love, and Jesus would do the daycare thing, and it's great." So the lesbian couple dropped their kids off, and this went on for a while. And then the lesbian couple started attending the church. And then the question became, to a lot of people around in this area, they started asking the pastor, what's the deal with the lesbian couple? And he said, "Well, this is a community center for the community, and here they go." And the lesbian couple goes on record in our research, when they're filling out this question about why they decided to start attending church again. And they said, "Because we have never in our life expected that an evangelical church would take care and love our kids well and literally change our entire financial situation as a family because of it. And so we thought, listen, we're not expecting you to marry us. We're just expecting you to let us be a part of your community."
That's cool. Okay, hold on. But the downside is that the reality is there. You and I both know this. There are couples out there who are a little more hey, hey, ho, ho, and they would possibly use this as a setup to then go, "Okay, you have to marry us."
Yeah.
Right?
That's true. And, you know, it is a part of the messy world we live in, that it's one thing, I believe the thing of faith is that, you know, you inherently see the best in people, or you want to see the best in people, or you want to think that people aren't trying to trick you or trap you or deceive you. And so, you know, you just need to keep walking forward and until something like that does happen, and that's when you address it. But
when I think that through, I think, I don't know, I'd be almost welcoming of that. Potentially you're trying to set me up and forcing me to whatever thing, because I don't want to sound like a complete cheeseball Rob Bell fan, but I think love would win. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
Preach, brother.
Yeah, I don't want to get mushy. I'm going to stop it. Stop it. You know what I would like you to study? I would like you to study how many people who grew up with a faith that condemned homosexuality, and they also were part of the LGBT community, how many of those people felt that they couldn't go home spiritually, and so they ended their lives? Any numbers on that?
Not specifically from our research, but I do know that the LGBT community in general, this has been done by other research agencies, but LGBT community has a 4 times higher suicide rate than any other population.
Mm. Yeah, not cool. Not cool. All right. Well, listen, there's so much more to chat about, but it's a radio show, so we're out of time. Andrew Marin, he's the author of Us Versus Us, The Untold Story of Religion and the LGBT Community. I would say this is mandatory reading for anybody in ministry leadership whatsoever, but also anybody who gives a holy grunt about this topic, this issue. These stories behind the largest ever scientific study conducted on the religious history, practices, and beliefs of the LGBT community. TheMarinFoundation.org is the website, TheMarinFoundation.org. Andrew, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Drew. This was great. Appreciate it.
Take care, man. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Okay. Well, Tori, why don't you snuggle up to that microphone while the mood music is playing? And we have a little thing we like Tori to do today. We're giving Tori her radio debut. Tori the intern.
Maybe you've been thinking about advertising your organization on the radio, but don't really have the budget for a long-term marketing campaign. Well, what if we gave you an entire show?
No.
The Drew Marshall Show is currently offering an innovative and affordable advertising concept for small business owners. With web stats and listenership at an all-time high, Canada's most listened to spiritual talk show is offering you an opportunity to partner with us for an entire show.
Nice.
Become a one-day advertising partner.
How many days?
One day.
Okay.
Oh.
And we'll introduce you to our listening audience for the day. Drew will mention your organization every hour during our four-hour show, and we'll give you a live five-minute phone interview.
Who does that?
Oh,
you do.
And one more thing.
Yes?
We'll also post your logo and website link on our website for an entire month.
That's a crazy deal. That's a deal.
So if you're thinking about promoting a special event, product, or upcoming sale, or if you just want to test out the radio advertising waters without a huge investment, then consider becoming a one-day advertising partner with the Drew Marshall Show. Contact us through our website, drewmarshall.ca, and ask about becoming a one-day advertising partner.
Ladies and gentlemen, yeah, Tori the intern.
Tori!
Well done. Very well done.
Thank you.
A short break, and when we come back, it's time to chat about the Enneagram here on the Drew Marshall Show again, and maybe this time we'll play music from a different artist.
Okay, maybe not.
Late-breaking story on the CBC.